Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. Hi, this is Hope Gibbs. We are here today with a founding member of the Conscious Capitalism Movement, Raj Sisodia, a professor of marketing at Bentley University and co-founder and chairman of the Conscious Capitalism Institute. Raj is also the co-author of the best-selling book that he wrote with Whole Foods CEO John Mackey called Conscious Capitalism, Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business. It was published in 2012 by Harvard Business Review, and they are on a massive press tour right now here throughout the country. And they are also our cover story for the April issue of Be Incandescent magazine. So welcome to the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, Raj.
Thank you, Hope. Glad to be with you.
Oh, we're thrilled. So our listeners know Raj has published 7 books and over 100 academic articles. His work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Fortune, Financial Times, the Washington Post, the Boston Globe, CNBC, and more. In 2003, he was cited as one of the 50 leading marketing thinkers and named to the Guru Gallery by the Chartered Institute of Marketing. Bentley University, which is where he's working right now, honored him with the Award for Excellence in Scholarship in 2007 and the Innovation in Teaching Award in 2008. He was also named one of the 10 Outstanding Trailblazers of 2010 by Good Business International and one of the top 100 thought leaders in trustworthy business behavior by Trust Across America for 2010 and 2011. So we are thrilled to have you here today on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show and to hear what you have to say about conscious capitalism and what that means for business and the country. So let's get started. First of all, tell our listeners, what is conscious capitalism?
Sure. Conscious capitalism is a different way of thinking about business, whether you are in business or whether you are a citizen or just an observer of business. There's a narrative that's been out there about what is business and what is capitalism for over 100 years, actually, 150 years or so. That has actually been quite corrosive and damaging in many ways. It was a narrative that was created by outsiders and by critics. Economists and Marxists essentially defined the terms of what businesses are supposedly about, that it's about profit maximization, shareholders matter, other stakeholders are just means to that end. And that narrow sort of self-serving narrative became the dominant paradigm, and that's what we taught in first in economics and then in business schools. And that's what a lot of business leaders somehow got indoctrinated with. But the reality is that business is not about that. As many of your listeners know, business is about doing something that you have a passion for. It's about meeting the needs, real needs of people. It's about providing means of elevating your existence beyond a base level. And if you look at the impact that capitalism has had in the last 200 years, on the average person, it's been rather extraordinary. Because per capita incomes, which were stagnant between $400 and $500 and $600 per person per year worldwide for thousands of years, really only started rising around the year 1800, and now have reached close to $9,000 per person in real terms, a 15-fold increase. 90% of people used to live on less than a dollar a day, and that's down to about 15%. We used to live 30 years on average, and now we live about 68 worldwide. Our illiteracy rates have plummeted. Many other indicators of our well-being are way, way higher than they used to be, and a lot of that is because of this system. So that's one part of the story. The second part is that once we become conscious of what business and capitalism are really about and what they can do, we can amplify its positive impacts to a much higher level, and we can actually negate some of the side effects or the externalities that we have with. So it doesn't have to be that businesses prosper and make money, but at the same time they may do damage to the environment and may have a negative impact on people's health and cause a lot of stress and so forth. None of that has to be the case. The business can be done with a spectrum of positive side effects, including great financial performance, as my research has shown. So conscious capitalism simply articulates that philosophy that says business has a higher purpose that goes beyond profit, the reason why it exists. Secondly, that we have to think about all of the stakeholders as important in their own right and not just as a means to an end of making money, and that we have to create value for all of them. The third, we have to have leaders who are driven by that purpose and who are driven by service and the caring that they feel for their stakeholders, and not just by power or by personal enrichment. And lastly, that these businesses have unique cultures that are based upon trust and caring and transparency and authenticity and integrity that allow them to continue to operate in this way, even though the context around them may change. So that's in a nutshell what the philosophy of conscious capitalism is.
And those four tenets that you just outlined, that's really the basis of your book with John Mackey. How did you come to meet him, and what inspired you to write the book?
I met John because of one of my earlier books, which was called Firms of Endearment, How World-Class Companies Profit from Passion and Purpose. That book was published in 2007. And in that book, we featured a number of 28 companies, 18 public and 10 private, that were loved by all of their stakeholders. Essentially, that's what it boils down to, loved by customers, employees, suppliers, communities, and even investors. And we set out to understand what is it that makes that happen. And what we found were essentially the principles or the tenets that I just outlined, that these companies do have something distinctive and unique about them, which is their purpose. They do have different kinds of leaders. They do care about all their stakeholders, et cetera. And as part of that, we had featured Whole Foods as one of those companies. Now, we had not actually interviewed John as part of that research because he did not grant interviews to book authors at that time. But after the book was actually not even published, but it was kind of in a draft form in a Word document, my co-author happened to be on an airplane and talking to somebody next to him and telling her about the book, and she was a friend of John Mackey's, and she said, well, he would really like that. Can you send me the manuscript? So we emailed her the Word document. John actually read it and got back to us and said, this is exactly what I believe in. This is my philosophy, and I really have a passion around propagating this more broadly. And so invited us to come and meet him. So I went and met him in October of that year and shared my dream for what I was calling the Institute for New Capitalism. And he said, well, I call it conscious capitalism. And so exactly the same thing. So after that, we started meeting more and having some retreats at his ranch and pulled together a group of people who had passion around this and essentially launched the movement in 2008 with a big conference in Austin. And then it's grown from there. And as we moved along over the last few years and we started to get more traction and a deeper understanding of what this is, we started to realize that we really do need a book that lays out the whole thing in detail. And so John asked me to work with him on that, and we did. And it's really been a great joy, actually, to be involved in this project.
And how is it being received by your readers?
I would say overall very well. The book has done very well. It's, I think, the second position on the Wall Street Journal list right now. It has, for those people who have actually taken the time to read it, it has received almost uniformly positive reviews. There are some people who are attacking it without actually reading it because they just don't believe that business is capable. And they think we're doing a whitewashing job on business and trying to create this happy, feel-good story about business and that actually business is exploitative and greedy and selfish. And so that mental model is very hard for some people to overcome. So that's what we want to try to overcome, because we really think that all of the challenges that we face on this planet are not going to be solved by governments, and they will not be solved by NGOs, and they will not be solved by religious organizations. It is going to have to be free enterprise organizations that ultimately meet the needs and solve the problems that we have. And how do we do that? We have do that by having conscious organizations, not just ones that are narrowly focused on short-term gain, but ones that are focused on long-term, broad value creation.
And your ultimate goal with the book is to raise the consciousness?
Yeah, so the goal of the movement really is to raise consciousness broadly and to get more new businesses starting up this way, to get large existing businesses to start to move in this direction, because the way that they're operating is not sustainable, it's not viable, and it ultimately will not allow them to continue to exist, actually. So we want to enable that transition to happen. We do think it's going to happen anyway, because we are living through a period of rapid gain or increases in our consciousness. But what we're trying to do is to accelerate that process and make the process itself more conscious for people.
And I understand you're having a Conscious Capitalism conference this spring in San Francisco on April 5th and 6th. Tell us about the details of that, its goals, who can attend, and really what you're hoping to accomplish by spreading the word about the movement.
Yeah, so this would be, I think, probably our 12th or 13th conference. We've done a bunch of them in the U.S., a number of CEO summits and a number of thought leader conferences and some open conferences like this one. We've also done conferences in India and Australia and Brazil and places like that. This particular one, we have seen it as a sort of a reintroduction of conscious capitalism because the book is now out. We're reaching a broader audience. There are a lot of people that are now curious about this. So we are inviting them to come to San Francisco. The first day will be a TED-like event with a lot of short presentations, panel discussions, etc., for a large number of people. And the second day will be, I believe we have 32 interactive workshops. So it's four parallel tracks going on, and there are eight things happening in each of those tracks, and you can pick and choose any of those 32 things to attend. And those are more in-depth examinations of some of these pillars, these tenets of conscious capitalism, and how to actually make it happen with a lot of practitioners, executives, as well as coaches, consultants, et cetera, who have experience in implementing these ideas.
It sounds excellent, and we hope to be there to cover it for our readers as well. So we'll keep our readers posted and our listeners posted on that, and we'll talk about some details.
ConsciousCapitalism.org has all the information that you would need on that.
Okay, we'll send people there with a link and with this podcast. So tell us more about your work as a marketing professor. You were at George Mason University, and now you're at Bentley in Boston. What trends are you tracking in terms of how businesses view the marketing of their companies? And talk mostly, or as well, in addition to the huge corporations, small businesses, how can they be more conscious?
Sure. So I have been a marketing professor for 28 years now, and for a lot of that time, I recognize that marketing, it has an interesting dilemma. It's a very powerful, very visible institution in society. It's a very powerful force in society with a lot of spending behind it. And yet, if you look at the overall impact that marketing is having in the world, especially in the United States, which is the most heavily marketed to society in the world, it's not uniformly been positive. In fact, there's been a lot of negatives. And if you also look at the impact of all of that spending on customers and on companies and on society, you really find that you would be hard-pressed to say where the great positive effects have come from. So my work was focused for a number of years on marketing performance and productivity, looking at what we spend versus what we get, and recognizing that overall our spending has gone up dramatically in the last 50, 60, 70 years on marketing, approaching $1 trillion or more now per year on marketing. And yet if you look at customer satisfaction, it's kind of flat. Customer loyalty is down. Customer trust is way down. So we're spending more money, and yet overall we're having, I think, poorer indicators of performance. So that's really a sign of something that is dysfunctional within the way we think about marketing and practice it. And so my research in this particular stream really started with a project called In Search of Marketing Excellence, which was basically asking the simple question, which are the companies that don't spend a lot of money on marketing and yet have customers who are highly satisfied, deeply loyal, and in fact very trusting of them? Because the opposite is really the norm. Most companies spend a lot and they don't have those things. And with that set of criteria, we started to find a number of companies and looked at them in detail. And we very quickly discovered that it really wasn't about the marketing. That these companies were equally loved by their employees and by their communities and suppliers and so forth. So that evolved into firms of endearment, right? And so what that gave me evidence to conclude that we really need to rethink marketing as we practice it today. It's too much about trying to convince people that what we have is the best and greatest thing. What we really need to be focused on is creating real value for all of our stakeholders, including customers, and that if we do that, that word of mouth and customer advocacy and stakeholder advocacy and media and all of those things ultimately end up creating a lot of the kind of value that marketing is supposed to create. In other words, we get the benefit of the best kind of marketing there is, which is free marketing. And that is an enormous impact on the bottom line because companies spend a huge amount of money on marketing. And if you can actually manage to do without a lot of that, then you will actually find that the financial results are far greater and that over time it just builds on itself as a system. So So that's really what I've been observing, that we need to rethink. I'm in fact working on a project right now with my PhD student on conscious marketing. And what is that really? It's ultimately focused on the real needs of customers. It's focused on a healing orientation towards customers, not a hucksterism, just trying to sell them stuff. It's about improving the quality of their life. It's about focusing on their real needs and not necessarily on their short-term wants and desires, which are often things that may not actually be ultimately good for them. It's about having a deep sense of responsibility towards our customers, not only to satisfy today's cravings, but also to lead them in a more positive direction and educate them over time about what's good and what they should be buying and consuming. So that's really my approach to marketing. And now I actually teach more in the realm of conscious capitalism. I still do a little bit of teaching in marketing, but it really would be called conscious marketing. Ultimately, I think all marketing needs to be conscious marketing, just like our finance needs to be conscious finance and our human resources really needs to be conscious people management. You know, this common thread is one of higher consciousness. And that's what we need to bring to bear on everything that we do, which means we do everything with a sense of purpose. We do everything recognizing its impact on all of the entities that are connected to it, so the stakeholder perspective, and that we take our responsibilities as leaders in that field very seriously and in a conscious way, right? And then we create sustainable cultures that allow that to continue.
One of the futurists that we represent, Andy Hines, he wrote a book last year called Consumer Shift, and he backs up with additional statistics about why consumers aren't allowing past marketing techniques to be effective anymore. So that's a something that we've also been tracking as a trend here at the Incandescent Group.
Traditional marketing just doesn't work.
Right, yeah, consumer shift, everybody is, you know, and it's a spiritual thing, you know, as you're talking, that's what it's making me think that people have raised their consciousness, so this hucksterism no longer applies, and not only is it not effective, it's counterproductive for a lot of firms.
Right, and so, you know, that's one dimension of change, which may be one of the more important ones, but there's so many things that have changed. I mean, if you just look at the last 20 years, you know, we did not have the World Wide Web until 1989. We've had extraordinary, so that has made the world completely different in terms of people having access to information. People are so much more informed about everything that's going on. They have access to all of that information instantaneously for free anytime. People are also infinitely more connected. We now have more active phone numbers in the world than we have people. People are also more intelligent. You know, our human IQ has been rising at 3 to 4% a decade now for at least 7 or 8 decades that we've got the data, which means the average person today is more intelligent than 97% of the people in the year 1918, let's say. So that's a dramatic shift. So people are capable of understanding complexity, and they're capable of understanding rich information much more so than they used to be. So it really cannot fool the people. And the last thing is, we're on this journey of continuously rising consciousness, where in every sphere of our life, things that we used to find acceptable or tolerable, we no longer do. So 150 years ago, we had slavery as the law of the land here, not only here, but many countries. It's pretty much been a universal condition in human history, but now it's unimaginable. 100 years ago, women did not have the right to vote virtually anywhere on this planet. 75 years ago, we still had colonialism. 50 years ago, we still had segregation in this country. 30 years ago, we had all kinds of child labor and environmental and animal abuse. You know, 20 years ago, we had apartheid in South Africa. Don't ask, don't tell was a policy until 3 years ago. You know, things are changing rapidly, and this will continue. You know, we have a much finer sense of what is right and what is wrong and what is acceptable and what is not, and that is all now coming to the world of business. So in our roles as customers, as employees, as community members, as investors, we are now bringing a very rich and complex set of perspectives to bear on what it is that we're looking for. And companies, for the most part, are not in tune with that set of new realities.
So for the small business owner and entrepreneurs, how can they tap into this new way of being in a very effective way, simply?
Yeah, I think for most small businesses, you know, that are able to succeed and thrive, they are clearly doing most of these things right. There's something special about them that is resonating with people. Of course, they're typically dealing with the local community. So there's much closer relationship with their customers, with their team members or employees and so forth. I think what this does is say that, you know, you are an unconscious conscious capitalist perhaps, but when you make it conscious, when you become conscious about these things, and you explicitly start to think about your purpose, and you say, what is our purpose? If I ask any of my employees, can they tell me why our company exists, why it needs to exist, and why it would be missed if it disappeared tomorrow? Would my customers be able to tell me that? You know, and you'll often find that, well, maybe we haven't actually articulated what our purpose is. Right? And we can actually come together and come up with a statement of what we're all about and why we exist that is actually deeply inspiring, as well as it tends to build on itself. In other words, once you articulate it, then it takes on a life of its own and starts to get enriched through the efforts of all the stakeholders over time. We also then explicitly start to think about all of our stakeholders not as means to an end, but actually as important in their own right. So think about how are we creating value for our employees at different levels, base level to transformational level, so that their work is not just a job or even a career, but a calling. Right? So they're deeply invested in it emotionally and spiritually. How are we creating value for our customers? How are we creating value for our suppliers? Many companies have a blind spot when it comes to their suppliers. They think that they can treat everybody else with love and care, but suppliers really don't matter because they're outside the business and, you know, we can just try to squeeze and take advantage wherever possible. But turns out suppliers are incredibly important to business success, more so today than ever. If you really treat your suppliers consciously, if you almost treat them like customers, then you find that you have a great advantage in the market because the best suppliers ultimately lead to the best business. So I think making it more conscious with all the stakeholders and then thinking about our leadership of the company and recognizing that we need to have people in leadership roles who not only have the technical qualities and the analytical intelligence, but also emotional intelligence and spiritual intelligence and a systems mind. And how do we cultivate all of those things? How do we create and select people for those attributes and then build? Most of those are actually things that people can learn and grow in. And finally, how do we pay explicit attention to our culture? Most companies, even many large companies, don't pay attention to their culture, they just let it evolve. And every company has a culture. But if you don't pay attention to it and just let it evolve, it could end up being actually something that holds you back. There are lots of toxic cultures out there that are actually highly averse to change and very rigid and really stand in the way of growing and evolving as a business. So again, by making these things conscious and paying explicit attention to them, when we bring our attention to bear on anything, it grows and flourishes. And I think that's what we can do in business as well, even if we're already starting by being unconscious, conscious business.
Excellent. Well, those are fabulous tips for entrepreneurs to run in the April 2013 issue featuring Conscious Capitalism with you and John Mackey. And we look forward to attending the April conference in San Francisco as well so that we can continue to blog and podcast about the good work that you're doing. So last question for you, what is on the horizon? Are you working on a new book?
Yes, I'm working on a couple of new books. One is my book Firms of Endearment, which came out in 2007. We are doing an update of that, a second edition, where we had 28 companies the last time around. I think now we will probably have about 75 companies where we're going to divide them up into groups of highly conscious, conscious, and becoming conscious companies, as well as international companies and private companies. And we're already in the middle of doing that research and uncovering a lot of interesting businesses as a result. And again, one of the points I haven't made so far is that our research revealed in Firms of Endearment that the companies that are conscious businesses, as we call them now, not only create all kinds of value for all their stakeholders, you know, intellectual and social and cultural and emotional and spiritual and ecological and physical well-being, but they also excel at creating financial value or wealth. Over 10 years, those companies outperformed the market by a 9-to-1 ratio, 1,023% to 122 for the S&P 500 as a whole. And over 15 years, we've added 5 more years of data, they actually outperformed 10.5-to-1. And in our new research, we're finding that the highly conscious companies that we've classified actually outperform the market by 22 times over a 15-year period. And even the conscious companies outperform by about 11 times. So there's a lot of evidence that suggests that this really works in the long term extremely well. and it's not about trade-offs. If you look for trade-offs, you always find trade-offs, but this says that you can, if you look for win-win outcomes, you will find those as well, because human creativity is essentially limitless, and we can always find those kinds of solutions. So that's one project. The other one that I'm working on with John Mackey and actually another professor at the University of Virginia, Ed Freeman, who's considered the father of stakeholder theory, stakeholder management as a philosophy, we're working on a book that we're tentatively calling Building a More Conscious Society. And this book is about taking the ideas of conscious capitalism but saying, you know, the business sector is one very large and important part of society, but it's not the whole thing. And unless we have rising consciousness in government, in nonprofits, in our education system, in media, etc., you know, we are not going to ultimately be able to prosper and thrive and solve our problems the way we need to. So that book actually looks at all of the different sectors, how they can each move towards greater consciousness, and also how they can work together, because many of the challenges we face will require cross-sector collaboration between government and business, or business and nonprofits, or sometimes all three. And how do we enable more of that to happen while recognizing there are many things that are best done by one of those entities, but many other things are best done in collaboration.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to all this work that you're doing, and we hope that all of our readers and listeners will go to consciouscapitalism.org to learn more about what you're doing and also pick up a copy of your book, which is very inspiring. Have you gotten any negative feedback on it, some naysayers?
Well, as I said earlier, the negative feedback has really come, it seems, from people who are deeply wedded to that narrow view of business, sometimes economists, who tend to view business as a math problem, and business is about maximizing X subject to Y. It's maximizing profit subject to all of the different constraints. They really don't understand business the way entrepreneurs do, those who have actually built something. So I think it really comes from for people who have that. The second area, I think, of resistance comes to come from people from the finance world, you know, because they, again, tend to view business through the lens of numbers and through the lens of purely money. And business is about so much more than that. So I think those are the two that I've seen that have responded critically to the book. Otherwise, for the most part, it has been overwhelmingly positive.
Excellent. And I can see why. It sounds like a positive movement, and it's some great ideas. So the best of luck to you and John Mackey. And we look forward to seeing you April 5th and 6th and publishing this article in Be Incandescent magazine. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Hope. It was really a pleasure to speak with you.
You too. We'll talk to you soon.
So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.